It's funny. It's a funny story. Okay, let's start. So this is part two. And what I mean by part two, I just mean it's just something that's not necessarily connected to what we did last week, although I will mention a few things. And that is how, I'll start with maybe, what do they say? I don't know which Hasidic Rebbe said this, and it probably doesn't matter because it's a good line, but at nighttime, a lot of parents tell their children stories in order for them to sleep at night. But in the Jewish world, we tell stories to keep our children awake. That's the function of a good Jewish story. So on that note, the story goes is that when we talk about davening, right, it's really hard, right? It's probably it's something that we do very often, and there's a tremendous amount of tension, even in the Torah itself, between, set text and not set text, when you do it and how you do it, and there's definitely that tension that exists. And then you go to, your typical shul, and most shuls aren't necessarily the best models, as funny as it sounds, for davening, right? And I think the story I think I told was a couple weeks ago, I'll repeat it, only a couple people were there, but it's worthwhile repeating. And this happens very often, that you'd have a non-Jew, or even a Jew who doesn't frequently attend a shul, would go to the bayit. And after davening, they would, go to Rabbi Taub, and they'd say, Rabbi, it's a nice service, but, I got here at 8:45 in the morning when services started, and it was just, me and you, right? And then around 9:30, a bunch of people rolled in, and they started, talking, and all of a sudden at 10:20, about 50 people just exited, And then they came back, and, Rabbi, this is like a synagogue, and this is like prayer, and, we'd never have that where I come from, And that leads to Rabbi Taub, saying, I guess he said this at the bite dinner a few weeks ago. And what he said was, the response you give to a non-Jew is very different than you give to the Jew. To the Jew, you have to say, it should come a time to davening, and you shouldn't talk to them. But to a non-Jew, you have to defend the Jewish people. That's the rabbi's responsibility. You got to defend Mikamcha Yisrael. So he said, listen, the difference between what we do and what maybe you're used to is that we feel in our synagogue, we feel very comfortable. That we feel very comfortable where we are. It has a disadvantage, and because we're so comfortable, we shmooze. Because in many ways, our shul is like a house. And just like in a house, even though in Toronto we have a custom to take off our shoes, okay, so that Jews don't do, other religions may take off the shoes before they die. But we have that homey feeling, right? We sit around the table. There's a real sense of decorum in a house, unless they're like real, yekkes or something. But we don't know any of those people. But generally speaking, it's fun, it's cordial, you walk in. So that's the disadvantage of it. But that's also the reality, is that we look at a shul as a place where yes, it's true that we have a sense of relationship with God, but it's a place we feel very comfortable. Which again has a challenge. We also said a couple weeks ago, it's worthwhile repeating, one of the fundamental principles that we're trying to work on here is when we talk about God, right? Relationship with God, and what does it mean? If you'd really think, and this is what I like about davening, and that is, and I said it last week ago, certain things I just feel are so important that I have to repeat them over and over again, more because I got to remind myself that they're important because I forget also, and that is sometimes too much actually is hurtful. Yeah, a sitter's long and there's a lot of pages, a lot of flipping to do, but in many ways, less sometimes is better. And sometimes, listen, let's face it, English is also often a lot better as well. And sometimes we're so forced because this is what we did when we were younger, and we're so used to doing it a certain way. How could we do anything different? But today we live in a world of incredible sidurim. I meant to bring a couple of examples and I forgot.
You want an ice cream?
So, meaning I don't need to, everyone here knows your ice cream. Meaning other options that are out there. Like I grew up in a shul not far from here called Beth Jacob in Bathurst Manor. It's like in between Shepherd and Finch, just straight ahead. So this were right near Faywood, turns into Wilmington. Right next to Chad. I grew up at the shul right next to Chad. At the time, it was a booming, thriving Jewish neighborhood, and now it's less than that. And we moved to Thornhill about 3 or 4 years too late. Right, we moved to Thornhill in '88, and most people left the shul like in between '83 and '86 and '87. And there was this old, I'm going to use a name, brings back nostalgia, because one minute I think you guys, there's an old sitter called the Tikkun Meir, right? The letters weren't even straight, and every other letter was you couldn't even read what it said, and the commentary, which didn't say very much, was in Yiddish. You know what I mean? Like, totally meaningless. Like, you know, take meaningless and now you have art scroll. You know, besides it tells you where to stand up and sit down. There's a commentary in the bottom, and you know the incredible Rabbi Sachs. I recommend. I don't know if I said this last time. Rabbi Sachs is an incredible sitter, but I actually have extra copies of it. People want for students. I've caught my house. Definitely have to Hillel at York, and his 20 or 25 page introduction is superb. And I highly recommend it. I should have. Okay. You know there? It's the Koran Sachs Sitter. The Koran has many Sidurim, but this is the Koran Sachs. There's also the Koran Rav Kook and the Koran Soloveitchik and the classic Koran and the Koran this and the Koran Chutzaritz and the Koran. So, yeah, the Chutzaritz one you have. So, you know there? Maybe I'll remember that Toby's remind me right, in a couple weeks, next week or 2 weeks. Next week, I don't remember the date anymore. It's on the fly. Whatever it is. The next time we meet, I'll bring a few. If you make it to the 3 week, you get a handout. You get like the, only the people who attend all three. No, I'm just kidding. But I think that's also, and again, because remember, Chazal, when they put together the Sidur, their assumption was that if they make any reference to a Midrash or a Gemara or Tanakh, that everyone understood the context and what it meant and its meaning. And of course, that's not the case anymore. So, I think that's always important to highlight. And the truth is, the first part, which is Pesukei Dezimra, is just like, it's really stretching. I like to use that example. For example, you know, you'd never, when you want to play sports, unless you want to injure yourself, you don't play the sport right away. You got to stretch, and you got to do jumping jacks, and you got to, you know, stretch here, stretch there, take a practice shot, practice swing, practice pitch, and then eventually you get to the real game when it comes to sports. And in many ways, that is very true about Tefillah itself. That it's, we don't, you can't just into it, right? That's not realistic. It's not necessarily something which we can do spontaneously, although there perhaps is a dimension that does exist, which maybe we can get to today. But from a conversational perspective of God, it really does require a sense of calisthenics and stretching. And that's Pesukei Dezimra. Pesukei Dezimra is not a goal, it's calisthenics. And if you really think about the Halalukas, and you really think about Ashrei, and you really think about, you know, that, you know, it, in many ways, from even intellectual perspective, if you really think, who has given me everything that I have, right? Everything that I have. The fact that I can breathe, the fact that I can eat, the fact that I can go to school, the fact that it's, of course, it's my parents and it's God. And if you really internalize those messages very deeply, in many ways, gratitude, demonstrating gratitude and davening is something which is logical and rational, because of course you're going to, and we all know at the same time, if anything goes wrong, God forbid, what can happen? And we know things can go wrong also in a moment. So I think if a person is cognizant of that relationship, then I think it's quite powerful. And I want to actually show you where halacha and where theology kind of come hand in hand. And I'll give a few examples of that before we start on the page, because that's like my intro. So, what type of volume do we use when we speak, when we actually daven Shmoneh Esrei? When I talk about daven, by the way, that's the Ikar Shmoneh Esrei, right? What are we supposed to do? What's our volume like? Our volume is, how are we supposed to speak? We're supposed to whisper. Right? Whisper. Right? And we know that halacha is a manifestation of a certain reality they're trying to create. So, whispering, if you whisper to somebody, that often demonstrates a sense of closeness. Right? And when you whisper to someone that you actually care about, and you express what's really on your mind and in your heart, so that also demonstrates a sense of, you know, closeness, a sense of a relationship, of caring, right? You see the image of like a couple, you know, whispering on like the sofa together, right? And that imagery, that model is something which in many ways is like when you whisper to God, right? If God's presence is right there and you're whispering, it's that sense of, you know, closeness. It's that sense of trying to feel that's palpable at that moment, right? So that's why the halacha is that you in fact do whisper. I said this on, how many of you were on the Yachad Shabbaton a couple weeks ago? Okay, a couple people. Okay, I'm gonna remember. I'm gonna repeat. I have some things on my mind, so that's why I repeat them. But it's always good. I think it's an important message to relay. Again, I apologize. I repeated it just a few weeks ago, but you know, sometimes we have to remember that details actually are very important when it comes to life. You know, you see here this bowl and the chips and the cookies and right, all these things. And this is just like a shir, right? But what about if it's a wedding? What if it's a simcha? So the knife and the fork and the color and the napkins and the all these things that I don't understand or appreciate, but they're very important, right? 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 You know, for Shabbos, so, you know, Miriam puts out the, oh, those are not the right napkins. What does it mean, not the right napkin? How can a napkin not be right? What? If the goal of a napkin is to clean your hands, how could it be a concept called the wrong napkin? It doesn't work? Like, I mean, if I use this napkin, my fingers won't be clean? That's considered a wrong napkin, right? What does it mean to put out a wrong napkin? I don't understand what that means. How is it possible? Right? And then she's like, that's like, you're never going to understand. Right? It's a wrong napkin. Is that weird? Is that weird concept? You're right. Wrong napkin. No. Anyways, whatever. So, men. Right? But I think, but there's something, but it shows, at least from Miriam's perspective, that when the table looks nice, it demonstrates that there's care, that it means something, it's important, as opposed to doing it in a schlochy way. Right? Details are important. And that is also very similar when it comes to halacha. Now, you can't be obsessed with details when it comes to a Shabbos meal or a wedding, because you forget, or a simcha, because you forget that's not the purpose of the simcha. The Shabbos meal, if you get obsessed with details, then you become obsessive compulsive, and then if a napkin is faced the wrong way and your simcha is ruined, then that's not good, right? But on the other hand, you have to find that right balance. But on the other hand, you want to make it nice and pretty. And that's also true when it comes to halacha as well, that yes, there are many details, but the details show that you actually care. Because as opposed to, I don't care, that shows that you don't care. But details demonstrate that you actually are concerned, because it shows that you matter, it shows that you care about the relationship, it's important to you, there's value to it, right? Again, you can't become obsessed with it, but it actually shows. And I think that's exactly where, especially more Chazal than the Torah itself, really comes into play, to show that, no, these things are very important, and also trying to demonstrate a certain reality that's trying to recreate, like whispering, for example, is one of them. Okay, with that introduction, what I want to do is, I want to actually jump down to source number 5, and we're going to take a look at what's the definition of the mitzvah. I'll give you an example. If someone were to ask you, what's the purpose of tefillah? Let me one thing I want to say. 2 weeks ago, we defined the word tefillah. It does not mean prayer. Prayer comes from the Latin word to beg, right? Whereas tefillah, as we saw, it comes from the word to think, to ponder, contemplate, to reflect, right? So therefore, if a person is being mitpalel, they're actually thinking about themselves, right? Just like you meet labesh, you get dressed yourself. A person who is mitpalel, they are contemplating thinking about themselves. And that's the purpose of davening. And that's why, you know, thinking about yourself and who am I, and that's why, by the way, what's the emphasis, especially during the weekday, is about requests. Because you are what you want, right? What do I want in life says a lot about who you are. Now, what do you need in life and what you want in life, hopefully, are aligned. Right? Some people think they need certain things and they want certain things, and hopefully, right? It's not always the same. But but fundamentally, your needs and your wants hopefully are aligned. And it says a lot about you, right? Who am I? What do I really need in life? Right? What do I want out of life? Why do I want health? Why do I want parnasa? Why do I want? Do I even care? You know, when I talk about Jerusalem, yeah, okay, Jerusalem's nice, but what does that mean? What does that entail? So that's why it's really a lot about, it's about a sense of self-reflection. So if you had to fundamentally, that's our definition. And the question is going to be, according to the Torah, forget the rabbi said that three times a day, and this is, I don't know, off time to get to it even, because we should have done a 27-part series, not a 3-part series, but I mean, I don't know why I said 27. Like, that's a funny number to use. But whatever. I don't know. Like a random number. But okay. The idea of, you know, three times a day, even. And maybe we'll talk about that in a couple weeks or in 2 minutes. We'll see how, from the Torah itself, you don't have to do it three times a day. Right? You don't have to do it three times a day. Chazal said three times a day, and what's that connected to?
The korbanot.
Okay. Korbanot. There's one problem with the word korbanot, and that is there's no korban at night. Right? There's only korban shachri. There's a korban ben arbaim. We call it mincha, but that's not the right word to use. Mincha is just a meal offering. We call it ben arbaim because we offer it a keves in the morning, keves in the afternoon, and at nighttime. We didn't do anything. It was the leftover limbs on the altar just simmered overnight, and that is the night one. But really, the three times of prayer is also connected to the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right? Avram wakes up in the morning, Yitzchak in the afternoon, and Yaakov at night.
Is that why we don't do
Chazar HaShatzamar? That's why we don't do Chazar HaShatzamar, because there's no real tefillah. That's why Mara in the Gemara says actually reshut. It's actually not obligatory like the other two. However, we accepted it upon ourselves, we should make it obligatory. But what's fascinating here is that, think about it, if you're davening three times a day, you're actually davening all day, right? Morning, afternoon, and evening is essentially a slot throughout the entire course. Now, in Islam, they do five times a day. They beat us, right? But I think we spoke of the posture. I think 2 weeks ago, the posture. I think right. Did I do that? Yeah. I don't want to repeat. But the idea of three times a day is only the rabbanan. It's rabbinic, right? Mina Torah. When do you have to daven? Somewhere to say, according to the Torah, when do you have to daven? When do you have to actually be mitpaleo? What would you say? According to the Torah.
Let's say the Shema.
But this is the Shema. So here's something actually really interesting. The Shema is actually not connected to davening. We connect it, but it's actually a separate mitzvah. There's a mitzvah called the Shema, Kriyat Shema. And by the way, that's actually, we say it twice a day, mitzvah Kriyat Shema, right? That's connected to time, which is why women are exempt from it, right? They can do it, but they're exempt from it, right? Everybody hear Sephardic?
I'm not the right half. We're Ashkenaz.
We do
Swahili
food, so like,
okay. That's like the best. So like, do we kidney on Pesach?
No.
Oh, in that case, who cares? It doesn't matter. We're not real Swahili. Anyways. So, having hummus on Pesach would like transform everything, right? So, no? Peanut butter on Pesach would like transform.
Yeah.
What was that?
My brother and sister-in-law
kidneys. Really? There you go. It's a different world. Okay, you know what?
Don't eat it regularly, but like, then just
yeah. You know what? We eat fine on Pesach. I don't know about you. What was I just saying? Pesach?
The Shema.
The Shema, thank you. Right, so the Shema is actually, believe it or not, a separate mitzvah. That's a great point. What about davening? What, according to the Torah, when do you have to daven? You want to take a guess? What's the Mishnah refers to it?
Like, where like they're discussing the different, like, what time of day.
So careful. The time of day is all rabbinic.
Oh, okay.
All rabbinic, right? The number of hours, right? All that's all rabbinic. All in the Rabbanan.
When you wake up?
But, you know, what would that be based on? What would you like? Why then? Just so when you wake up is actually Shema. Shema is when you wake up when at night, right? When you lie down, when you go on your way, that's Shema. B'shach b'chav k'mecha is referring to Shema. Right. Not sure. Okay, so let's take a look at some sources for a second. Take a look at source 5. And I want to get the technical part, then we're going to actually see a phenomenal philosophical debate, which is really interesting. Number 5. Says the Rambam, in the laws of Tefillah and Nisiat Kapayim. What is Nisiat Kapayim? Kohanim. That's Michiat Kapayim. There again. Nisiat Kapayim literally means Nasi is to raise your Kapayim, your hands. That's a Kohen for Duchanim. Okay, which we don't do too often. In Chutzarts, even though it has to be done every day. Fasting, isn't that interesting? The Torah says.
Sarnim do it every day.
I'll explain this. Actually, this is phenomenal. It says in the Torah to do good for Kohanim every day. We Ashkenazim only do it on. No, and Rosh Hashanah Kippur, Yom Tov. Yom Tov. Al Chagim. Like Nachal Moed, only on Yom Tov. How do they do that? The reason is because. It has to be done with a sense of simcha. And because Jewish life in Poland and Lithuania was so difficult, they couldn't bring themselves to a sense of joy that's needed for the Kohanim to bless the people. So they minimized it only to Yantiv. Where Sephardim didn't have the same level of persecution, and therefore they do it all the time.
When did they change that?
Oh, this is hundreds of years. All right. The Ramah, the Kohen Shana, says, no, we don't do Bergarim every day, only on Chagim. So some Sephardim only do on Shabbos, because there's no mitzvah of Simcha on Shabbos, only on Egg. Okay, with a different item that's like to complicated. In Israel, it's different. In Israel, because that's actually interesting, even Ashkenazim will do it every single day, because the Ramah says in Chutzaris, we're so persecuted. Yeah, in Israel, it's every day. Yeah. Only in Israel, because we're our own, you know. So. Okay. Okay, let's go on. So let's take a look at number 5. Says the Rambam, Mitzvat asei litpalel b'chol yom. And listen to the language of the Rambam. Lehit palel. To ponder yourself, to contemplate, to reflect every single day. How do I know this? The Rambam says, if it's in the Torah, it has to be a pasuk. Na'varetem et Hashem Elokeichem. Mipi hashmua lamdu. When the Rambam says mipi hashmua, don't confuse modern Hebrew. Shmua in modern Hebrew is a rumor. Mipi hashmua means the rabbis. Lamdu, right? Avodah is tefillah. Right. So based on Torah Shabbat Peh, a better way of actually, the Pishma was actually Torah Shabbat Peh, not rabbis, that the word Avodah is referring to davening. And therefore, he tefillah, Shenemar, la'avdo, to serve him with all of your heart. Amru Chachamim. E zo hi Avodah Shabbalev, what's considered work, labor of the heart, that's tefillah. Right? Meaning, when we talk about davening, it's hard work. It's not supposed to be easy. Right? It's just like we use the terminology work or labor is an avodah. What's avodah shebalev? By the way, don't think, although we use this term often, we say that lev means emotions. It's not so simple that that's true. Because the Torah says lev ladat. Lev is knowledge. So we often, in the modern world, think, oh, he's emotional, right? He's a heart, right? That's not necessarily true, at least in the Torah. So, but regardless, when the Torah here, when the Rambam says, what's considered worship of the heart? That's considered tefillah, right? It's cognitive, it's emotive, it's emotional, it's hard work. It's not easy. V'ein minyan tefillah min haTorah, the number of davenings in the day is not in the Torah. V'ein mishana tefillah zot min haTorah. And even the language, tefillah zman kavua, the timing, the Rambam says once a day. You want to do it at 2 p.m.? Great. You want to do it at 10 a.m.? Great. You want to do it at 2 in the afternoon? Once every, for argument's sake, 24-hour period, according to the Torah, you have to do. That's what Rambam says. Okay. Comes along the Ramban. So the Rambam, not only did he write a book that listed every mitzvah in the Torah, that's in source 5, but he also wrote a book called the Sefer HaMitzvot, where he elucidated all 613 mitzvot in the Torah. The Ramban, who lives basically a century later, comments and argues on him. The problem is, it's not fair, because the Rambam can argue because he's dead. Right? So it's not really a fair battle, because I can say you're wrong, and here's why you're wrong, and the poor guy there's no rebuttal. So I believe that's not proper in court, right? You can argue, yes, right? You have the right to reply. So he doesn't have the right to reply because he's dead. Don't worry, he had students who replied for him. That was, but anyways. So take a look at this. So in source 6 on the mitzvah, which is the positive commandment number 5, he says katav harav. He says the Rambam writes mitzvah chamishit. What is the 5th positive commandment? Just the vinu v'dat Hashem v'aratem lakechem divrei harav. The ain't has to come up and says, no, it's not so simple that everyone agrees to what the Rambam says in source 6, right? Go down to the underlined section. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4th line. Then what does he say? Aval chuvat atfila atzma min haTorah. The gamze nur nochem ben. He says, the concept of davening every day? No. According to the Torah, you don't have to do it. Ela vadai kol inyan haTfila ino chuvah. davening every day, it's not obligatory. Klal. Avahu midat chesed habore itbarach aleinu sheshomea v'one b'chol kriyas lev. But it's a great kindness that God hears our prayer. So imagine, could you get an audience three times a day or once a day with, what's the name of the prime minister? Got the good hair? Trudeau, right? Could you get an audience with him? There's no way. Who are you? Nobody. You, Davin, you have an audience. Ki ata shomea tefilat amcha Yisrael. Or tefilat kopev, nosel svart. Right? Hashem listens to our, it's an unbelievable thing. So the fact that Hashem listens to our tefillot, right, is considered a chesed of God, right? It's like, you know, it's almost, you know, the difference between us and God is the difference between an ant and a human being. Or it's even greater, right? If an ant wants to talk to you, first of all, if you think an ant's talking to you, you got bigger problems. But just like the relationship that an ant has to a human, you want to do well in school? Okay, all right, fine. Right? I mean, that's, but in many ways, that's the difference. That's the gulf between God and a person. Yet, one of the fundamental principles in Jewish thought is no, God hears our prayers. V'ikara katuv la'avdo b'chol avavchem mitzvat asei. And even though, right, it says to serve Hashem with all of your heart, says the Ramban, it has nothing to do with davening. When the Torah says, means serve Hashem wholeheartedly. It doesn't mean davening. It means that whatever we do, right, all of our actions, all of our service, should be towards God. Right? That why am I eating? Why am I working? Why am I studying? Why am I walking? Why am I this? It should be to serve God, right? Be a servant of Hashem. There's no greater title. Moshe was called, and Eved Hashem is the greatest title you could have, right? That's what this pasuk means in that we see in Shema. Lo shenasa mitzvah below kavana. It's not that when you do a mitzvah, you should have kavana, right? Al safik lo yesh behem tohelet. Okay, and then he goes on to say, by the way, I want to kinyan. Vavta et Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavcha u'v'chol nafshecha u'v'chol ma'odecha shamitzvah hi lehov et Hashem v'chol lev v'lev. You have to love Hashem with all of your heart, with all your being. Shenitzakin b'havato b'nafshinu modinu, with our hearts, with our souls, and use our money to serve Hashem as well. And that's what the pasuk in the Torah means. Meaning, it has nothing to do with davening, per se. It has to do with our daily actions to be in the service of God. It's kind of like 7-Eleven, right? 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, whatever, right? We're supposed to recognize that we are working for Hashem. And that's what Ramban says. Now, before we continue, there's a great line that I only know because of Rabbi Sachs. Rabbi Sachs quotes the Akedat Yitzchak. Akedat Yitzchak was a contemporary of the Abarbanel, who wrote a commentary in the Sidur. And he writes this, or Sachs writes this in letter in the scroll. Anybody read letter in the scroll? You have to read in the scroll. It's a mantra reading for every teenage Jew, every teenage boy and girl to read letter in the scroll. It's a great book by Rabbi Sachs. He wrote it as a wedding present for his daughter. Wrote a book. Sure, why not? Okay. You wrote it in 93. One of the first books they published. Now, he writes there something very important. He says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's what it says in Dvarim. Vavta et Hashem Elokecha. Right? So Shema Yisrael is a call. Hear Israel, Hashem is one. The oneness of God, the unity of God, which we've been talking about for a long time, but we're not. To love Hashem with everything that we do. And then, Vishinantam Levanach Vidibartabam, and we have to teach our children. Rabbi Sachs, who quotes from the Akedat Yitzchak, he says, you could only teach something that you love. What's the juxtaposition between these two psukim of loving Hashem and then teaching your children? You only transmit. You could only teach things that you yourself love. If you don't love something, you can't transmit it. Right? And it's very, very true. Right? Passion is very addictive, right? If you see someone's passion and they love something, you're inspired by it, right? If someone that we know, right? I don't like to do a study, but I don't know who's going to pay for it and who's going to agree to do it. But, you know, I imagine most of the time, people whose parents are good role models, I mean, school can help. And when it comes to davening, their children are more likely also to be, right? People who I'm sure who talk in shul. That's why I would never blame anybody under the age of 30 to talk in shul. Because chances are, their parent talks in shul. What do they want from them, right? Someone who comes late probably is because the parents come late, right? I mean, modeling. You can only demonstrate what you love, right? You can't demonstrate, you know? That's why schools have such a hard time. Because certain things cannot come from school. In fact, it's a great tragedy in Jewish life. We think schools fix everything. It's wrong. Jewish history has taught us over and over again, the greatest educational experience is actually in the Jewish home. Always. And it's, but it's even more true today than it used to be. You know, in the olden days, if they went out, they would sleep over, and you would be out of the house for a very long period of time. Today, everyone...